This week on the Glass Cannon Podcast, the heroes take time to heal their wounds.
Della will pull out a small vial of dark red liquid. Ooh. Takes a single drop and anoints herself with it.
Weird character.
What?
Matthew, not Della.
And pray for guidance.
He starts to recite the Acts of Iomedae. Would you please gather round? It's going to be a while.
They'll ponder the big questions.
I think that we're all dead and this is all the afterlife.
Oh, sorry, I thought you were asking about Lost. I'm sorry.
And take a hard look in the mirror.
I have to say, I am still shocked. The most important things in this tomb you gave to the NPC.
The adventure continues now.
What's shaking, everybody? Welcome back to the GCP. Troy LaValle here yet again. Wild episode last week. I'm glad to hear everyone enjoyed that one. We've got another fun one coming at you shortly. But this week, we thought we'd try something a little different for the intro. We like to mix things up from time to time. So, for the first time ever, I know you love when I say that, we're going to take a moment to hear the backstory of one of our new PCs. But rather than just tell you bits and pieces or read you a narrative, we thought it might be fun to hear it right from the character's mouth. It also helps that I have at my table one of the best role players in the history of the game. So, ladies and gentlemen, I give you Nestor Coyne.
I have bounced around quite a bit since cutting my teeth on the mean streets of Rillport. Magnimar, Nidal, Cheliax. I've been south to the Shackles and east to Assyrian, as the saying goes. Generally, I stayed till I felt a wanderlust, or till I wore out my welcome, usually the latter. But a little while back, I found myself in a hard, cold north, in Ustalav, and soon enough fell in with the Demon's Horde Mercenary Company. I don't know if you heard of them, but they got rather a dark reputation. But it suits me, as they were less inclined to ask pointed questions about my past. But before too long, I got assigned to guard the caravan of this fat old grain merchant going on a route to Urgir and Belkson. And we had talismans of safe passage from the orcs, so they didn't bother us. Things were quiet. I'm ashamed to say I got lax in my duties and took to the drink a bit too much one night. Always liked to drink. And wouldn't you know, it was that very night we were set upon by giants. Or they made quick work of the sober guards, if indeed they were sober, I can't say. And as disappointed as they were to find all those laden carts stuffed only with corn, they were even less enamoured of the idea of taking captives. So they made their way down the line, snapping necks and spilling guts. And your faithful narrator was taking up the rear. Now, my old dad used to say to me, "You're too clever by half, my son, and half again is mad." And this is important to bear in mind when I tell you, dear listener, that by the time they got to me, my plan was fully formed. "My dear fellow," I said to the brute, "did you think we deal exclusively in foodstuffs?" "Oh, no, no, no. When we set forth from Caliphas, we were bursting with treasures, sparkling jewels, carven tusks of ivory, boats of finest silk and spices from Far Chan. We've sold them along the way, of course, and received cash recompense in return. But my employer fears bandits, you see, and giants most of all. On his order, I have buried the gold to be reclaimed on our return. Only I know where it is." Now, it wasn't true, of course, but I am, if nothing else, a talented and practiced liar, and I have been honing this skill for decades. A glint of greed in his big sorcerer eye told me that he had taken the bait.
"You say me where, little man?"
"It would be my pleasure," I said. "But only if you promise me a finder's fee, only my fair share, of course."
"What is fair?"
Now, rather than embark on a lengthy discourse on the nature of fairness, I decided to cut to the chase. half. A moment of bemused silence soon gave way to chuckles, then laughter. Oh, how they did laugh.
Joke. Little man makes joke. What you say?
I said, I get half the gold. Sorry, I didn't catch your name.
Jorik,
he rumbled. Lovely. Anyway, that's the deal, Jorik, you towering pile of donkey dung. I get half, or you get nothing. Now, my dear listeners, I don't know if you've ever felt a fist the size of a pickle barrel slam into your gut, but the feeling is, well, it's quite indescribable. But suffice to say, I don't recommend it.
Now I say deal, little man. Jorik get gold, you get nothing.
He drove his pillar of a finger into my back as I lay in the dirt and bent down so I could feel his hot breath on my neck.
You say where?
Over the coming days, dear friends, they did use every trick of torture and deprivation that they could think of. My trusty hidden lockpick sewn into the fabric of my undershirt was of little comfort, as I couldn't reach it, and even if I could, it would be little use against the thick hempen ropes that bound my hands. But I wouldn't budge. I would bide my time, waiting for the tiniest dropping of a guard, the narrowest of openings. Half or nothing, I'd spit through swollen lips. Half or nothing. Eventually, I could tell that they were becoming quite frustrated with my lack of compliance. And Jorik, old Jorik, was really laying into me with increased zealousness. And after some, well, fairly cutting speculation on my part regarding his mother's chosen profession, oh, the big bugger swung his fist full force into my gob with a sickening crunch. My front top teeth went scattered all over the ground, much to the delight of the gathered throng.
Now you say, little man.
I lifted my head, smiled a red smile, as I felt the blood trickle down my chin. Half or nothing. He swung again, and I was out cold. When I came to, I heard him grumbling, saying that they would head south towards home, and if I wouldn't say where to them, I would say where to him, the boss man. I heard his name then, whispered in fear and awe. I jotted it down in the old ledger, in the debit column. But just then I spotted something, metal in the dirt, close enough to reach with my feet. A single silver coin. Maybe it fell out of Jorik's purse when he knocked out me pearlies, I couldn't say. But quiet as a mouse, I pulled it along the ground with my foot till it reached my bound hands. I palmed it just as one of them looked over. But as fate would have it, the very next day we happened upon an overturned cart with kegs spilling out of it all over the road. Turns out they were full of gash, which is a distinctively foul and potent brand of orcish blood wine favoured by the upper crust of Urgir. And wouldn't you know, the big louts couldn't help themselves, and by the time the moon rose, they'd guzzled every drop. One by one, they nodded off, till only I remained. I slipped a coin between my fingers and began scraping its rim against a lump of granite at the small of my back. Screech! Screech! That sound echoed all over the campsite, but was mercifully swallowed by the snoring of giants. I kept at it till I caught myself on the edge, and I started working the ropes round my wrists. Strand by strand gave way until I was finally able to work my hands loose. I untied my ankles and rose to my feet, stretched out my limbs, cracked my neck, and set about my business. When old Jorik opened his eyes, it was me he saw, surrounded by the dead and soaked in stinking blood. Old Betsy, right there in me hand like she never left it. I had saved him for last, and I made sure he was awake for the end. I grabbed the rest of my gear and all the coins I could find. I'm no expert at navigating through the wild, but I do know north from south, and me left me right, as my old dad would say. South they were taking me, and south I would go. I'd heard of civilization that way, and perhaps I could find my way all the way to the big boss man, Balenciaga, so to speak. Many nights later, in the driving rain, I saw it, the so-called City of Trunau. It was a bit rough round the edges, but any port in a storm, as they say. I talked my way past the guard and instinctively found my way to the most dangerous bar in the town, the Killing Ground. I sauntered through the door, past a sad-looking armoured wolf that was tied up at a hitch for some reason, and made straight for the illicit dice game in the back. I pushed my way into the circle of bounders, off-duty guards by the look of them, and dropped my coin purse right in the middle. "Now then, lads," I said, "who wants to lose a week's wages?" This cheeky green-eyed bastard with the biggest bank took me up. He had this sort of natural smirk that drove me batty, and I was looking forward to leaving him destitute. Now, I should have known something was up straight away, but I was a bit tired and worn out from my recent endeavours. So I slipped my loaded dice into my palm and started rolling. But, much to my surprise, the dice were failing me. No matter how well I rolled, he rolled better, and I was bleeding silver. Before I knew it, I lost it all.
"Was that your last coin, Mr. Coin?"
he laughed, with edges of mouth twitching up.
"I'm afraid they don't look too kindly on beggars in here." "What's that you broke?"
I heard the barkeeper as he came waddling over.
"Listen, if you're skint, you'd better be on your way. This ain't no charity house."
Now, at this point, I knew he had cheated me. No honest gambler would ever look that smug. Now, ordinarily, in this situation, I would have humbly gathered my things, left the establishment, only to hide in the shadows until he emerged. Then I'd follow him at a distance till he staggered past a sufficiently dark alley, pull him into it, kill him, and take my money back. But I looked out the window, and it was still raining. And the thought of standing in that while I waited for this cunt to drink his way through my silver was decidedly unappealing. Quick as a blink, I snapped Betsy from a hidden sheath on my wrist and plunged it right into his throat, under the chin. As the blood sprayed, he staggered back and his loaded dice dropped from his sleeve into the circle. "There, you see," I shouted. The locals were on me in an instant, and the guards were grabbing me, throttling me. I think a little halfling bloke was jabbing me in the bollocks at one point, but I was used to pain. And I got dragged out down the streets, them telling me I was going to get strung up. "It's a fair cop," I thought. "But the joke's on you, lads. I got me lucky pick sewn into my tunic. I'd get a couple of good nights' rest, pick the lock on my cell when the time is right, rob the place, and then make my way south in search of the big boss, Bob's your uncle." But funny thing, though, my lucky pick was gone. They threw me in the cell, and I felt for it, and it wasn't there. Fuck. But I didn't panic. I'd always had a knack, a funny habit of pulling things out when all seemed lost. After all, I was the sole survivor of the wreck of the Harpy's Shriek. Better to be lucky than good, as my old dad used to say. And I'd always been quite lucky. I'd just bide my time, wait for my opening. I pulled myself up under the cot and lay back with my hands behind my head. I closed my eyes and sang a little song from the old times as I waited for dawn.
So awesome. So awesome! As you know, there are many ways to create a captivating three-dimensional character. Just remember that they're only going to ever really jump off the page, jump off the map, as it were, if you take it beyond the dice, take it beyond the numbers, and really dive in. How far you go is totally up to you, but listening to Skid, I hope you see that there are no limits to what you can do in Pathfinder and tabletop RPGs. Thanks for listening, thanks for being such great fans, and please enjoy episode 78, Night at the Mausoleum. What a beautiful day to play Pathfinder. If only Ingrihild was here to see it.
Oh, man.
I miss her so much already.
That's a little raw for me still, Troy.
Sorry.
It's a little low, like the dwarves stand.
Oh! Oh, man. short jokes.
As the shortest member of the podcast, I feel like I have the right to make those.
That's been that's been established repeatedly.
Wow, that was a crazy combat. Were you guys feeling overconfident after the Ettercaps and the spiders?
Yeah.
Certainly.
I felt like there was probably something coming up that would take us down a peg because that's we have weaknesses that have been exposed. One of which is like now we all have ability drain and no one to heal it.
Yeah. So, I mistakenly said, because in the heat of battle, you were like, is that the Baleful Gaze still on? I'm like, no, it's gone. And then after the session, I looked, and like, that is drain. That drain, the con, I think Umlo, 4 strength, 4 con, 2 charisma. That is drain. That can only be healed through magical healing. And then you have what? 2 strength, 3 con, 2 charisma?
Yeah, correct.
Nestor is down. Yeah, so that can only be healed with magical healing. The effects of the spores, which I think Nestor, Della, and obviously Umlo is still under the effect of, those will heal 1 point per day. 1 point per day. But man, Umlo, even though he has the steel hand, the magical spear, and the giant nail scale mail, he is not looking too pretty in the ability score department. I have to say, I am still shocked. The most important things in this tomb you gave to the NPC.
Yeah, I gotta say, for the last week, I've been a bit remorseful that Lork wasn't in here. Because, man.
Yeah, this is his stuff. Oh,
would Lork.
There goes the hand, right?
There goes the hand.
Yeah. Totally.
Man, would he have done well with this equipment.
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't even. That did not even dawn on me until you just said that. Like, Lork with the steel hand. Wielding giant weapons.
Yep. He nail, loves killing giants. He would have had the giant nail snail. The giant nail snail man. It would have fit perfectly. I blame you. I blame you.
Yeah. I blame you guys for not taking that steel hand. Willamette could have wore it.
Yeah,
well, Della would look great with a steel hand.
I'm sure Willamette's going to walk up and be like, cut my arm off and put a medium-sized hand on it. Just like leaning down. He's overweighted down. On one side.
He looked like Hellboy.
Why not Della, though? You're a melee combatant.
Because you know what you really want when you're a shadow creature who dances around is a steel hand.
Well, but imagine, take out the idea that it's not going to add any weight. You control it like your normal hand. It's not like it would be affecting your dance moves.
I just didn't see it having any value. I mean, she's so trained in the scimitar, and she's a finesse character that wielding giant weapons would have been a waste on her. Willamette, on the other hand.
Nobody wanted to fight fire with fire, though, huh? Wield their weapons against them. That's what Arkham Steel handed.
Grant and I were talking about how it would have made story sense, more story sense for Baron to take it, but no game sense.
Right. If you'd had any melee stuff whatsoever, like if you were to start multi-classing and dip into fighter, dip into war priest or whatever, like then you using giant weapons is cool, but unless you have a giant gun.
I do feel, though, that after we read the funerary note, I am thinking that maybe I might be related to this Magmar son of Manus.
So that's another thing that we didn't really get to delve into last week.
Let's talk about this note. So what do you actually glean from this? Obviously, Nestor read it aloud to you, but now, Baron, this seems like it's very pointed at your history. This guy looks like you on the mural. It looks like a young Baron. He's wearing an ancient duster.
It's very kind of Egyptian to bury a tool that could be used in the next life with a hero or a pharaoh. And the idea, I love that there's just all this exposition in this note for someone to find later. But, you know, I'm hoping that it's directly written from the man in the duster in the background that knows this.
So now let's think in terms of your what we know of Baron's story so far. Let's say you are related to this guy. Maybe you are, maybe you're not. What is his story? He's saying that when dwarves are born in his clan, they bring them to the top of a volcano, and they bury a gun underneath them. And if the infant survives when they come back, they give them the gun on their 40th name day. You have found out through the mists, whether they be true or not, that you are not a Red Heart.
Right.
You remember a vision, a memory of your parents arguing, your foster parents arguing that, you know, they find out about this secret. We're going to use this to take back the clan, whatever. What do you think's going on here? And all of you can chime in.
Well, I think that we're all dead, and this is all the afterlife.
It's getting very, very interesting theory by Skid.
That'll sorry, tell. I thought you were asking about lost theory. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Grant. No, Grant should really cover this one.
I'm just wondering, if there was some sort of rivalry between the Five Kings Mountains and the Mindspin Mountains, and if I actually am from the Mindspin Mountains, and as a child, I kind of survived and was saved by the Red Hearts to be brought in there.
Maybe that was you.
And they wanted to keep me away from the council. And they knew that perhaps, I don't know how well known this was, but if there was people in power that knew that if I were to grow up to be 40, if I was a child of this clan and find this power, I could unseat kind of the power in the Dwarven Kingdoms.
And then meanwhile, you're... adoptive parents get the power of guns as well.
Right.
A power that was not meant for them.
Right.
Interesting. As Baron's story continues to unfold. So now you're in this tomb. Brutal battle. Ingrahild, dead. Umlo has decided to burn her here and leave her remains. I know that Willamette or Joe off air, thought that was kind of strange. But what is he going to do? Carry her body around? Like, nobody can cast gentle repose. He just thinks that this is right. And now you've inspired him to join your party.
Yeah.
Which is pretty cool. I was not expecting that.
Well, I also think that to me, it wasn't so much of like, Willamette doesn't want the hand. I mean, he doesn't. But it was really more of like, it just seemed so appropriate for Nargrim. You know what I mean? Or for Umlo. He's a descendant. He's there. He's been with us. And he says he doesn't want to fight anymore. He wants to walk away. But I think that it was interesting to see him kind of be inspired. And ever since that moment, my wheels have been turning about, Willamette's relationship with Umlo and how that is going to change now. Because if Umlo keeps repeating that he's just a cook, he's not a fighter, I really want to explore the idea of Willamette, training him.
Oh, that's cool.
Because Willamette has been trained since a kid in, castle professional training for martial arts, So I think that it might be an interesting thing to explore.
Well, I love the idea that Umlo, I want him to really be a fifth character member. I think this is, a lot of times, I know I'm terrible with NPCs because I just don't like controlling them.
It's hard to do
things.
As a GM.
It's hard. You've got to roll for them, and then you've got to roll for the monsters, and you're attacking yourself, and then you're, It gets very
And lots of combats have little secrets and traps and little things the monsters can do that, And you either deliberately walk your NPC into a trap to show the PCs, or you deliberately avoid stuff to wait for a PC to do it. It's kind of a complicated situation that get off your plate is really nice.
It's a conflict of interest.
Yeah, that's exactly what it is.
It's masturbation is what it is. It's masturbation. So I honestly had no plans for you guys to not take the steel hand. I think you're the only party that's played this game that has not taken the steel hand. I'm 100% sure of that. Most people are like, I want the steel hand. Nobody's okay. And he's got this magical spear, which I don't think you guys have spellcrafted yet, to find out a little bit more about this large weapon that he can now wield. And then obviously you know what the scale mail does, which is really cool and complicated. But I want to try something new, and I think it's something that we can encourage in other people's games. I want this NPC to really grow with the party. And so I'm going to let you guys control him.
Oh.
I've printed out his character sheet.
Oh, here. You mean this one that you gave me before we started recording?
That exact one, Skid. I just wanted you to look at it. This is his character sheet. It looks like it would look like if it was a bestiary stat box. Mm. So it has all his stuff here. I'm going to let you guys take turns every episode controlling him. And I'll let you role play him too, and we'll see how it works.
Awesome.
Wait, how does Umlo talk?
He talks like this. It's low. It sounds a lot like Rag.
He talks
because I'm lazy.
He talks like this.
Matthew, let me hear your best Umlo.
I'm here. I'm Umlo.
Baron, what about you?
I'm Umlo, and I'm here with the steel hand of Nargrim to kill the giants.
It's pretty good. It's like velvet and peanut butter.
So really, the whole time, Grant has been Umlo.
You have been Umlo. Skid, let me see your Umlo.
Hello, I am Umlo. I am a beautiful dwarf.
It's very good.
Look at me, look at my long red hair.
He is so good with voices.
I want to kiss you all over your little dwarven body.
Joe, what about your best Umlo?
No, Rag was like this. Umlo was more like this.
Oh, that's nice. Right. I see there the difference. Go. I can actually hear it. You want to be it first?
I think I'm going to give it to Skid.
All right.
He's the role play guy. I'm going to follow his lead.
Skid, cool. You are the first Umlo.
Right, thank you. I'll be Umlo.
Oh, that's good. Damn it,
see,
good.
I told you.
Damn it, he's good. All right, so yeah, we'll try this out. We'll do it for four episodes, and we'll see how it works.
A rotation. You're saying one of us
Yeah, one of you episode. Control him and role play him and everything. And, you know, I can... It's kind of a co-role-playing thing because I can tell you, like, I think Umlo wants to... Like, right now I can tell you Umlo wants to rest in this tomb for the night.
Are you prepared for me to have entire long conversations in Dwarvish that you guys can't understand? Because that's how I'm going to play it.
I would be shocked if you didn't.
All right, great.
One of Grant's things is like, I speak to it in Dwarvish.
Yeah. Yeah. He doesn't like anyone hear what he's talking about.
Okay, so, yes, the last thing I will say for Umlo is he's like, I would like to rest here the night, lay my sister to rest. Perhaps there's other things we want to look at in here, and then my spear is yours.
Hmm, I see.
And I magically throw the character to Skid, like an improv game.
The improv game.
You pass the squeeze to Skid.
Zip, zop.
I'd like to spellcraft this spear by reading its stat block on the character sheet here.
Does it tell you its magical qualities on the set?
I think so.
Oh, damn it, I should have.
Loophole.
Quick, Matthew, roll stealth.
Yeah, Matthew, would you please?
Natural 20 on the spellcraft.
Go! All right. Well, good thing you had no idea what it was. All right. Fitted with a menacingly cruel 2-foot-long barbed iron head, this large +1 giant bane long spear can skewer an opponent.
Woo,
lodging, like a wild boar.
Lodging beneath the flesh and holding fast. You ready for this?
Whoa.
On a confirmed critical hit with the spear, Heartspit's wielder can attempt a combat maneuver check to grapple the target as a free action because the spear is lodged
the barbs.
In its skin.
Oh, wow.
A grapple attempt does not provoke an attack of opportunity if that creature is not threatening the wielder. While grappling the creature with... This is the best part. While grappling a creature with Heartspit is the name of the spear.
Heartspit.
The wielder can move or damage the target with the spear only on the wielder's turn. The wielder is still considered grappled, though he does not have to be adjacent to the target to continue the grapple.
Oh, that is cool.
If the wielder ends the grapple, or if the target successfully breaks the grapple, the target takes 4d6 points of slashing damage the spear's barbed head ripped free.
Oh, wow. That is awesome.
Isn't that amazing?
So here's a question. Do we get a card on a confirmed critical? Or is this always the same
That's
critical
gonna be,
bonus?
I'm going to have to decide that when it happens. I didn't even think of that. That is 4d6 damage.
Yeah.
So you confirm a crit, you're grappled, and then you can decide on the next round. I pull the spear out.
It's like having a fish hook in your skin.
Yeah.
4d6 points of slash. You know what? You still get the card.
I think
that 4d6 of slashing damage comes when the grapple is broken. That may not happen the next round. You should still get that juicy crit stuff. Like with Gorm's Thorn. You get the
and
trip opportunity.
And it's a times three, isn't it? It's a spear.
It is. It should be it a, is a times three.
Oh, amazing.
Brutal. +1 Giant's Bane long spear.
Wow.
As you are spellcrafting Heartspit, Della, you also notice magic emanating from Baron's new gun.
Oh. Get out of here.
I look at the gun and I say, and I look at the spear as well and I say, it's finally time to see divine weapons touched by Torag's own divinity.
Two dragons coiling up the butt of the gun? What is that called? Handle?
Handle.
Grip. Is this handle? Grip? I like grip.
And I say to Della, I know of how guns are made, but I do not know how they are made magical. Would you also tell me the potential of this weapon?
Absolutely.
Here comes the natural one.
Fucking shit. Natural four. No. Ooh. 11.
Imagining you have no idea what it does, so you point it at a target, shoot it, and all of a sudden just like flames come spewing out everywhere.
Della, do you know what this does? Let me look.
It's a 14.
No.
Nope.
14. No, that's enough. It is similar to Heart Spit. It is a plus one Dragon's Bane dragon pistol.
Whoa. Holy shit. This guy was hunting dragons?
Sweet.
Wow. Whoa.
Wow.
So
that bodes well for us.
Oh, no. Now we're going to have to fight dragons and giants. Giant dragons.
It's his ancestor.
I want to think, though. I want to do some sort of knowledge history check to know if there were dragons around the Minespin Mountains that the dwarves would have to forge a weapon of this caliber. Because you have to know the intent of the weapon to defeat a certain foe to give it a bane quality, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I don't have knowledge history.
You can maybe ask Della.
Bardic knowledge will let me roll it.
Mm-hmm.
Oh. 15.
15. What you would know, Della, that it wouldn't be uncommon for there to be dragons in the Minespins. I mean, there's dragons all over Galarian. There are dragons that, like, people know their name. Like, that's Nurimithrax or whatnot. He's a very famous dragon. He's been around for hundreds of years. My grandfather fought him. And, you know, they just aren't. They live for a long time. They get into battles. They come in and swoop, and some live peacefully. Are all dragons chaotic evil, Skid?
No, no.
Do you know about dragon pistols, Grant? You know your Pathfinder guns pretty well.
Wait, hold on.
Nerd. Oh. Nerd. Nice.
Grant's got some spleen to do.
It is time for nerdage.
So in the pistol area, in the early pistols range, there are single-barreled pistols, double-barreled pistols, and there are dragon pistols, which are used to give spread effect to ammunitions. You can have salt shots, all sorts of different things to...
It's like a sawed-off shotgun.
Yeah, in similarly nasty ways, it can spread just junk everywhere. It's good for crowd control. The other things that go... The other kind of pistols are pepper boxes, which you can revolve and keep on shooting. It's like a crude revolver, and then revolvers are the very last, most advanced pistol. But a plus one, I've been wanting for a long time, because the limitation of my gun is that I can only really use flare cartridges, which is the thing I used to dazzle the orcs at the Battle of Blood March Hill. But I've wanted to use a lot of the other cool ammunition out there that's only available for weapons that can do scatter ammunition. It's a miniature blunderbuss. Fires pellets or a bullet from its flared barrel. The dragon pistol fires in a 15-foot cone when firing pellets and has a 10-foot range increment when firing a bullet. Dragon pistol uses either a bullet or a group of pellets and one dose of black powder or a single alchemical cartridge as ammunition.
I want to see a receipt for every single cartridge that you build.
It's going to happen.
You're going to be cash poor, man.
It's really cool that I could be 20 feet away, shoot from my double-barreled pistol, and then once I got to take quick draw now.
Yeah.
Or I could do two
weapon fights.
But then I can't reload the guns.
Here's the cool thing about it. Spread shot, obviously. You're going to be able to hit multiple enemies. The negative... Because of our new house rule, better be careful if you're shooting near an ally. Because you'll be spread shot. Della, dead. Bullet in the head. Willamette's. Lexington, dead.
That wouldn't come into play with the spread shot anyway, because the rule wouldn't, because they'd be exposed to the damage either way if they're in the spread of the...
Right. So basically, Baron needs a clear shot to really use
that.
So that's why I was...
If Baron's just an really asshole. Tough situation. And Della's like... Shoot her!
Yeah, just so I can take the bullet!
Shoot her!
Critical hit.
Shoot her!
That was critical a reference hit. That Troy did not get.
And you said it was adamantine, right?
I did not.
Okay, just checking.
But it only uses adamantine bullets.
Oh, shit.
I'm forging them.
All right.
Okay, so, you guys, obviously he wants to do the ceremony. I'm not going to roleplay that all out, but it's very somber. He lays her to rest in the brazier and burns her in there and leaves her ashes in the brazier. And he says, let's spend the night here, and then I would like to seal, if you would help me seal the tomb. All I want is this beard clasp. And it's the beard clasp is, he tells you, it's crafted from a cloud giant's ring.
Oh, wow.
The ring of a cloud giant. And cool. He puts it on his beard and pulls it all the way up. And he says, anything else is yours if it'll help in the fight to save
the world. It's yours.
I can't remember if we talked about this, but Della's going to take those boots of Agile Alpenstock.
Wasn't Boots of the Winterlands?
No, Boots of the Winterlands and an Agile Alpenstock.
That was back from when we killed the Hill Giant. I just conflated the names in my head.
Ah, right. All right, so you're taking Boots of the Winterlands. Yeah. Winter is coming. All right, and then, yeah, what is there anything else you guys want to do in the tomb? It's the next day.
Well we need to heal.
Before it's the next day, okay. I want to...
It's not the next day.
After Della had her... this is another thing I don't think you guys know, and I don't know if you remember, but after Della spellcrafts the gun, Willamette's demeanor changes immediately, and he gets very serious, which... you know, is sort of out of character. I mean, he is serious, but he is like somber, and he walks over to look at it, and he asks if he may hold it.
I turn to Willamette, and I say, "You may. You've proved yourself in battle."
So he sets it in Willamette's hands, and Willamette is looking at it, and his hand is almost like shaking a little bit, and he kind of is like just slowly rubbing the hilt, or the grip. With the two dragons, and he's thinking, like, this guy's ancestor hunted dragons, and this gun is designed to kill dragons, and he's looking at Baron, and he can't believe the fate of it, because what he was told by his adopted parents is that his family was killed by a dragon.
Oh.
That his entire village,
oh wow,
halfling village, was wiped out. By a dragon.
This is internal, or?
This is internal, yeah. So he just hands it back to you. So he doesn't say anything to anybody, but it is it's the campaign trait that I took for him. It's a Giant Slayer campaign trait, is dragon foe. And if your family was wiped out by dragons.
Oh, that's cool.
Because that's why, you know, I wanted him to be adopted and everything. Right. Oh, here's a trait where if your family was killed by dragons.
If you didn't tell me that, I would have thought you just made that up on the spot. That's so cool.
Yeah. It fits so neatly right here. I didn't realize there, you know, I figured since it's a campaign trait, there would be dragons at some point, but I didn't realize the gun, that's really neat.
I turned to Willamette and I said, "Did you see anything in there? Do you just wanted to look at it?"
No. I'm fascinated by dragons, is all. He hands it back.
Well, I pray we never meet one.
And you were just a child when this happened, right?
An infant.
Yeah, so you don't have any.
I have no memory of it. I don't even know my family at all. I mean, my adoptive family was great, so it's not like he really ever was that sad about it, but there's always been something in the back of his head about dragons, that he's never seen one, he's never come across one. It's like a... This elusive foe that has been sort of in his mind his whole life.
Now, Nestor, you obviously palmed a few things, and put them in your pocket. There are other things that I went over with you guys. I emailed it to you, the sort of list of accoutrements and their worth. Are you guys going to take those funerary items, or are you going to leave them? What do you want to do? Amlo has given you permission to take whatever you want if he thinks it'll help. Obviously, those were left for Nargrim, but he feels like if you can sell them to get yourselves better gear, that's what Nargrim would have wanted. Nargrim would have wanted you to do that, but that's up to you guys.
That's Nestor's argument. obviously, this is what he would have wanted. I think we got to obey his wishes, whatever we think they would be. So, you know, that's my vote.
You're a dwarf now?
I'm a dwarf sympathiser, I'll say that. I sympathise with the plight of the dwarves, and, you know.
I appreciate all the help you've given us thus far, Nestor.
You're quite welcome, it's been a pleasure.
While it may be distasteful to me that you get the gold, you've earned it. Fair day's work, fair day's pay.
That's right, that's what my old dad used to say. He said, never be afraid of a hard day's work, especially if it's somebody else doing it.
Skip.
Oh gosh.
So Willamette, Della, what do you feel?
If we have Baron's okay, and Umlo's permission, I don't see any reason not to.
I'm sorry, I lost track. What was it?
We're
giving all the gold to Nestor?
No. Taking the funerary items to sell at the next town you come into or whatever.
We're all playing severe concussions. I don't know if we mentioned that.
No, I got it. Yeah,
I ran right into a whiskey bottle last night. It hit me really hard in the head. Yeah.
I was trying to like set up something for Sirenscape, and I just was not paying attention. Yes.
Spent a week there one night.
That's a great line.
I love that.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, I'm fine with it.
Okay.
So I follow Umlo and Baron's lead there.
Umlo's like, I lied, you're grave robbers! Grave robbers! And he takes Heartspit and stabs Delicate. 46.
I turn to Sir Willamette and I say, Willamette, I'd like you to, if you can, in your paladin training, say a prayer to cleanse this place of the evil of Lochmore Ettergen.
Please. Of course, I'd be honored and most humbled. Would you please gather round? It's going to be a while.
He starts to recite the Acts of Iomedae, and in doing so, also, you know, weaves in Torag in very clever ways. And 45 minutes later, the prayer's done.
Nestor's asleep.
Della, who hitherto,
wake me when it's over.
Her only experience with religion had been Galabras, is like, this is what it's like.
It's
glad I'm an atheist.
Exactly.
Not anymore.
You know, I think, hey, if we're all taking a little piece of Umlo, I think Umlo really appreciates it and really likes it because he weaves it. Because you have to understand how Iomedae, the Acts of Iomedae are all about her being an incredibly badass warrior. And so he weaves it in with the history of Nargrim and everything that he did and how he couldn't have done it without the divine help of Torag and how Iomedae is, you know, who he looks to, but how Iomedae and Torag are allies and all that kind of stuff. And it hopefully it helps to make the place feel sacred again, and it dispels the evil.
Baron is very moved by the prayer to Iomedae that is given by Sir Willamette, and he reaches into his duster, pulls out a book you've never seen him pull out before, and that's the holy text of Torag.
Oh.
Hammer and tongs, the forging of metal and other good works. And Baron turns to the group and says, just as Torag toiled away at his forge to create all of Galarion and its inhabitants, so too have these troubling times forged our lives together. It is with the greatest of respect for Torag that I pledge the rest of my life to be his avenger upon Galarion. First for Torag, second for True Now, but third and not least for all of you, even you, Nestor.
Strong words.
Oh, thanks.
And I like that, man.
Yeah,
that's great.
That's great. And Umlo steps up. He says, pardon me, brother, but it's all right. I'd like to, if I could take a look at that text, I'd like to do a reading for my sister.
And the book to Umlo.
Thank you, brother. So I'd like to read the second act of the holy text about death, rebirth, melting and reforging. And 3.5 hours later, he's done.
So no rest.
No. Yeah.
No, you guys are all fatigued.
No, yeah.
And sickened. Let's throw in sickened.
Della's like,
sickened for 1d3 hours.
Does anyone need healing, by the way?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
All right, we're so all you guys banged up.
Do the healing that you want to do, and then let's rest and
okay, so this is actually
the first time.
This is actually going to matter because we're not going to be able to heal just from resting. So
that's right. You will not wake up full.
Yeah, so I'm going to fire off one, my last channel. I had one more channel of the day. So I'm going to fire that off now. 9 points of healing.
Nice.
Della will pull out a small vial of dark red liquid.
Ooh.
And we'll offer, say, does anyone need a little help?
Damphia!
She takes a single drop and anoints herself with it. And she casts Infernal Healing.
You're a weird character.
What?
Matthew, not Della.
It's like it basically gives me fast healing one for a minute. So you get 10 hit points back.
Wow.
But you detect as evil for the duration of the spell.
Yeah, your spidey sense is tingling.
Yeah,
a little
Nestor,
bit.
Nestor watches and says, you just get more and more interesting. You know that.
Willamette is obviously very turned off by it.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's Baron. Not up your alley.
God. speaking of the gods, Baron is kind of having a bit of a religious moment down here, so...
So not so much with the demon's blood?
I think he's going to abstain at least until we exit the tomb of this dwarvish hero.
That is so creepy, Matthew and Della, like, but somehow so appropriate when you think of Della's backstory. You know, but I really like that.
I think Della is really turned off by those who are turned off by it, because that's how her father reacted when she learned it, when she learned the spell.
The plot thickens. All right, so that's your
what
channel.
About a wand? Do we have a wand?
I have a wand of Cure Light, too. So I can
Cure Light?
I can also cast it, so.
Okay.
All right, so let's top each other off.
Oh, what was Umlo down to?
He was down to 16.
Well, Umlo's in a tricky situation because his con is down, what, 9? Or something?
Right,
so
his
max hit points are down significantly.
Right. Oh, I see, okay.
All right, who needs the wand?
Willamette does. But he asks you if he may take the wand. He's a little creeped out, but he's like, Della, would you mind if I just... Thank you.
She's like, stares at him as you pull it out of her hand.
Willamette's going to take it, say a prayer that's good, and then cast it on himself.
Baron asked Willamette to please bless him as well, and he doesn't want any of that demon hoobu-jubu on him.
All right, and we can just get all that healing done off air. We'll track the charges and everything. And get
Della is going to cast Cure Light as her bardic spell, Cure Light Wounds on Umlo twice.
It might just need to be one.
All right, just one.
See how we get.
4.
Then yes, you do need to do it twice.
2.
Oh man.
No.
She was trying to repair.
He's 2 down.
16 to 22 hit points.
He's at 30 hit points because of his insanely reduced constitution.
She pulls out the vial of devil's blood. He's like,
yeah. So Umlo is.
Sure, I'd like a bit of devil's blood.
He's down 5 con damage, 4 con drain. So overnight, he's going to heal 1 point of the con damage, but he's still down 8 con.
Yeah. So what I'm going to do, what Willamette is going to do, is talk to Umlo about how he is going to pray to Iomedai for the ability of lesser restoration, and he will in the morning cast it on him and heal 1d4 con.
You know, I'm thinking like if Umlo stays with you guys and survives and whatnot, when you level up, I'll have Umlo level up with you, and maybe he'll level up paladin.
That would be cool.
He'll be a ranger rogue paladin. So interesting. Because you're training him, you know. Anyways, okay.
Are we exploring the rest of the tomb that we may have missed before?
Yeah, I mean,
the
only room you didn't get a chance to really explore was the room with the paintings. But you didn't see anything of note. It's just if you want to look at those paintings.
Willamette never saw that room, so he'd be happy to go take a look at it.
As you walk upstairs, I imagine Umlo like maybe looking through that book of Torag overnight, like really getting interested in this as well, since his forebear or his ancestor was obviously huge into Torag, with the huge warhammer on the ground there. And he looks at those 4 statues that were in the room that led to the secret entrance, and he's like, these are Torag's siblings.
Ah.
That's Torag, and that's his brother and his sister.
There's Torag's siblings.
And he just kind of looks wistful, thinking about a sibling lost. You guys go into the room with the paintings. Willamette, you especially wanted to check that out.
Yeah, so I'll just do a roll of perception check. 15.
You don't see anything of note, per se, other than this desecrated room. It's like showing memories, essentially, in these paintings. There's huge stone panels lining the walls, each depicting a carved scene, but they've all been damaged or defaced. And in fact, the last one has shit smeared on the plaque.
Right, you had said that.
And there's hundreds of footprints crisscrossing the floor.
I want to do a check for any secret doors, and I want to look behind each painting.
Okay.
Do you want those to...
Just do a stone cutting.
I'll do the same thing. Oh, natural 20.
That is a 26 for me.
There are no secret doors in the room. Umlo especially is 100% sure.
And behind the paintings, anything?
Nothing.
Can I appraise the paintings?
Yeah, they're worthless at this point because the eyes have been scratched out of all the paintings. Very creepy.
I say a quick prayer from Torag's holy text, and that's all I have.
You see that the plaques read like the slaying of Drogmalak the Terrible, victory at Hrothbad's Mines, and the last one. Obviously, it's covered in fecal matter. If any of you were to wipe it away,
yeah, that's what Umlo was going to do. Is fecal trying to matter. clean it off.
Of course, it says the betrayal of Lockmore. The final painting portrays Nargrim's last breath.
Now, are there any battles with giants being depicted in here?
Oh yeah, the slaying of Drogmalak the Terrible. That was another giant.
What kind of giant is Drogmalak?
It was a frost giant.
Oh wow. Wow.
Yeah, this guy was badass.
No
yeah.
kidding.
Yeah, for real, man.
Phew. I'm going to roll ability heal for Umlo.
We're at the next day?
Yeah, this was the next day,
right? So you have to...
Oh, no, we haven't rested yet.
You mean Willamette is doing something?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. What is
because
it?
We rested, right?
Yeah, you rested.
Yeah, so this is the next day. So Umlo is going to... Or Willamette is going to call Umlo over and lay hands and heal some of his con damage. 3 points.
Awesome. Nice.
That's amazing. Great.
That's fantastic.
So he healed one overnight.
Is that the drain or that's the damage?
The damage. So okay. He had four con damage, I think you said. Or was it five? Four or five.
Four damage. Well, it was five. He healed one overnight, so then it's four. And so you just did three.
Three,
more.
Which heals him completely, essentially, of his damage.
Okay. Right.
In terms of the penalties.
Minus one doesn't do anything.
Yeah, minus one doesn't
so
do
he's
anything.
Got, how much drain does he have now?
So he gets plus two, he has four drain now.
So I'm doing
plus
this on
okay.
Hero Lebskid. His max hit points are now 46.
Big difference.
Yeah.
And then I will also do a lay on hands to him.
Correct me if I'm wrong. When you heal the con damage, you get hit points back as well. Don't
yeah.
you?
Those come back. Yeah. Right. Yeah. I'm two down. Great. So.
Oh, great. That's huge for Umlo.
Yeah, that was awesome. And this is the first time Willamette's ever done it. Because he just hasn't really had to cast that spell before.
Very cool. The way, you know, when you take abilities and it all just... I mean, this is an ability that you do, but it just works in the story with all this religious
yeah.
stuff happening
yeah, yeah.
and whatnot.
So it's almost a thank you, my little furry-footed brother.
it's my pleasure.
Okay, so, you know, it's a new day and you guys head outside.
Emerge from the tomb.
Umlo and Ingrahild's horses are dead.
Oh, of course they are.
Well, could be worse.
They are dead. Right. Well, Ingrahild certainly doesn't need her horse, but Umlo's like, I'll keep up with you.
Della offers to carry him on Reginald, who's heavy and she's especially light, so the two of them should be able to ride together.
Who's riding the front? Who's riding the back?
He'll ride in front, like Gimli and Legolas.
Is he going to be shirtless like Putin?
You are the GM.
He's shirtless.
I walk over to my horse and I take a look at Uskras armor, which we've been carrying since Galabras was made feeble.
You just have it like tied up on your horse, like
yeah, it's in saddlebags type of things. I whip the top off my saddlebag and I look at the armor. And I take a deep breath, like I just did. Out of character. And I look at the fist of Nargrim Steelhand on the tomb. I look at how we've torn down everything, and I think about the journey we've gone on, and I realize that it's a far different journey than we started. And I look at Willamette, and I see the sunlight hit his little halfling face just right.
His beautiful blonde hair.
Lexington's tongue.
His blue eyes sparkle in the light.
Lexington's tongue
very
wagging out of his mouth, perhaps smelling a potato nearby like tambourine.
Lexington, who's never rolled any sort of save.
He's impervious.
He's impervious to saves.
Lexington the
idiot.
Impervious.
He's immune to any spell that has spell resistance.
He's immune to any spell that requires the GM to pay attention to.
It's a high trait.
What Baron sees for just a moment is a overwhelming sense of goodness about Willamette in the same way he saw it in Galabras and devotion to their gods. And he sees someone who might be a little more cocksure but someone that is also well deserving of Oskaros armor. And he says, Willamette, get over here.
Yes, Sheriff. What do you need? I'm at your service.
A man very important to me once wore this armor through all our battles. He saved my life and the lives of everyone in the town of Trudeau. And it's a shame that he can no longer wear it, but I can't think of a finer man than yourself to wear this armor. I want to thank you for trying to save the life of Ingerhild. And I know that you will wear this righteously in the path of might.
Sheriff, I'm overcome. This is a great honor, but I'm afraid, as you can see, I've come across some fine sets of armor in my day, but they don't fit me. I'm a small warrior with a big heart, but it's just not something that'll work for me, though I do appreciate the gesture.
This armor resizes to the appropriate wearer. It chooses its wearer as much as the wearer chooses it. Take it.
Put a greave on his hand.
Schlort!
Throwback.
It's a deep cut.
Oh, wow. Okay, so yeah, so Willamette's kind of overcome. He's like, this is extremely powerful. Magic. Where did you get this armor? And he's like looking at it, examining it, unclipping it, opening it. And then asking Umlo to help him take off the half plate that he is wearing. And I assume, you know, you tell him like the story of the armor and everything. And then, wow, that's, I'm just imagining Umlo like clasping it on. And then it just starts to like hug to his body and it becomes small. That is so cool. So then I'll ask, you know, what magical properties it has and which I know, but yeah.
And right. I say to him, it would only be fitting now that you have become a full-fledged member of this party and an honorary dwarf that I present you with Will's Wit. It's a long-beard lambic. Welcome.
This is awesome.
Welcome to the team, brother.
You know what, Grant? Bottle cap.
Yeah!
All right.
Awesome. That was great.
Well earned.
Well earned.
Wit. This is...
That is perfect.
It's Will's a longbeard lambic.
Is one of the oldest known dwarven ales. Longbeard lambic is fermented with wild airborne yeast and cultures, especially those that proliferate the dank caves where it has been brewed since long before the quest for sky began.
Sounds delicious.
Longbeard.
Yeah. I could go for a Will's Wit myself.
Longbeard lambic has a bracing effect that shocks the system. If the drinker is fatigued, shaken, or staggered, she can ignore these conditions for 1d4 rounds after imbibing Longbeard lambic. In addition, a dose of Longbeard lambic can reduce exhausted condition to fatigued, which would have been great for the berserker build.
Yeah.
Or the frightened condition to shaken, drinker's choice, for the same duration. If you consume a second Longbeard lambic within 1 minute of the previous dose, you must succeed a DC 15 fortitude save or be nauseated for 1d4 rounds.
It's like Mad Elf.
It's exactly like Mad Elf.
The DC increases by 5 for each dose imbibed within the same time span. Dwarves gain a +5 racial saving bonus.
That's really cool. Thanks, man. That's really awesome. Nice. That's
a fun little character.
So awesome. So Willamette is like walking over, trying it out. Walks over to Lexington. He's like, Lexington, what do you think of my new armor? And standing in front of him, showing off.
The wolf shits on the ground.
Yeah, he just deuces.
So how is this affecting Willamette's mind when they explain to you that you can grow big, but growing big to you just makes you medium size, but you're going to be, you know, a average height?
It's completely like he's scared of it. Yeah. Like he's kind of freaked out by it. He's never known anything else, and he's like, I believe there may be a time for that measure. For now, though, I'm content at my own size. Thank you very much. But he is going
to
think about it.
You're going to have to recast him as Tom Hanks.
Della is keeping her distance. You can tell she's kind of like sticking with Reginald, not looking over at the exchange that's happening.
Ooh, this new buddy system and the reticence around the infernal healing could drive a wedge between little deputy...
Factions.
Little deputy Della.
Roll a perception check, Della. 16. You guys come out of the tomb of Nargrim Steelhand. The web is that you guys took it down.
Yeah, we
right?
cleaned most of it up, yeah.
Is there, and you know, off to the right is where this Willamette and Baron thing is happening with Lexington. Nestor, what are you with them, or are you kind of...
Yeah, I was going to say, Nestor is watching this exchange of armor take place and hearing about it, looking at it. Just the face completely blank, but he thinks to himself, that looks really valuable.
And then off to the left, a little ways away, Della is with Reginald, and you hear a rustling in the leaves, maybe 25 feet away from you, similar to where you guys came, like along the path. And as you turn to look, you see a older fetchling
what?
Woman walk out of the brush. She has long black hair, semi-translucent skin, and she's wearing a long white robe. Della? Della, is that really you?
Della, is it, does she know, does she recognize her?
Looks like an older version of you.
She draws her scimitar. Who are you? Who are you?
Please, I don't mean to harm you, my child.
What are you doing here?
I have searched so long to find you. You're even more beautiful than your father said. My child, it is I, your mother. You are so beautiful, and so brave, and so strong, just as your father told me.
Where is he? You've seen him?
Yes.
Where have you been? Where, what's going on?
There is much to discuss, much to tell you, as I'm sure you have many questions. But your father is fine. He's in the Shadow Plane. He got there and was able to release me. And now I'm here, and I've searched for you, and I've found you. And she puts her hands out to, like, see if you'll come to embrace her.
Sense motive.
Mm-hmm. You 100% believe her.
I believe that she's my mother?
Yeah.
Della rushes to her.
You guys see this go down, Della.
Oh, rush. We can see her?
Yeah, yeah. You know, I'm sure you were busy talking and whatnot. Right. Della's fixing her horse and whatnot. And
she drops her scimitar and just runs to her.
Drops her scimitar, runs to her, and you see this embrace of two fetchling women. Della now has long blue hair, but you could see if Della's hair was the way it used to be that this is the spitting image. And she holds her, and you just see Della's back, and you see the woman's face. And the woman's face, her eyes open, and her face starts to wither. And her back starts to grow a hunch.
No way!
It's Iwiga!
No way! We'll see you next week!
Oh my god!
Holy fucking shit, are you kidding me?
She's so good! I'm not going to do that.